he, like the rest of male humanity, was in love with Hermione Watson. The only mystery, really, was why Gregory was surprised. Gregory had to commend him. Fensworth managed a few minutes of inquiries about his sister's welfare before he added, "And Miss Watson, will she be joining us as well?" It wasn't so much the words as the tone, and even that not so much as the flicker in his eyes, that spark of eagerness, anticipation. Oh, call a spade a spade. It was desperate longing, pure and simple. Gregory ought to know. He was quite certain it had flashed through his own eyes more than once in the past few days. Good God. Gregory supposed he still found Fensworth a good enough fellow, even with his annoying infatuation. But really, the entire situation was beginning to grow tiresome. "We are so pleased to welcome you to Aubrey Hall, Lord Fensworth," Kate said, once she had informed him that she did not know if Miss Watson would be accompanying his sister down to the Rose Salon. "I do hope that your presence does not indicate an emergency at home."
"Not at all," Fensworth replied. "But my uncle's requested that I fetch Lucy and bring her home. He wishes to speak with her on a matter of some importance."
Gregory felt one corner of his lips quirk in an upward direction.
"You must be quite devoted to your sister," he said, "to come all this way yourself. Surely you could have simply sent a carriage."
To his credit, Lucy's brother did not appear flustered by the question, but at the same time he did not have an immediate answer.
"Oh, no," he said, the words coming out rather quickly after the long pause. "I was more than happy to make the trip. Lucy is good company, and we have not visited for quite some time."
"Must you leave right away?" Kate asked.
"I've been so enjoying your sister's company, and we would be honoured to count you among our guests as well."
Gregory wondered just what she was about. Kate was going to have to locate another female to even up the numbers if Lord Fensworth was to join the party, although he supposed that if Lady Lucinda left, she would have to do exactly the same thing. The young Earl hesitated, and Kate took advantage of the moment with a beautifully executed, "Oh, do say that you will remain, even if it cannot be for the duration of the party."
"Well," Fensworth said, blinking as he considered the invitation, but it was clear that he wanted to stay, and Gregory was quite certain he knew the reason why. But title or no, he was still young, and Gregory imagined that he answered to his uncle on all matters pertaining to the family. And said uncle clearly desired Lady Lucinda's swift return.
"I suppose there would be no harm in taking an extra day," Fensworth said.
Oh, dandy.
He was willing to defy his uncle to gain extra time with Miss Watson, and as Lady Lucinda's brother, he was the one man whom Hermione would never brush away with her usual polite boredom. Gregory readied himself for another day of tedious competition.
"Please say you'll stay until Friday," Kate said. "We're planning a masked ball for Thursday evening, and I would hate for you to miss it."
Gregory made a mental note to give Kate an extremely ordinary gift for her next birthday. Rocks, maybe.
"It's only one more day," Kate said with a winning smile.
It was at that moment that Lady Lucinda and Miss Watson entered the room, the former in a morning dress of lightish blue, and the latter in the same green frock she'd worn to breakfast. Lord Fensworth took one look at the duo, more at one than the other, and suffice it to say that blood was not thicker than unrequited love, and he murmured,
"Friday it is."
"Delightful," Kate said, clasping her hands together. "I shall have a room readied for you straight away."
"Richard?" Lady Lucinda queried. "Why are you here?"
She paused in the doorway and looked from person to person, apparently confused by Kate's and Gregory's presence.
"Lucy," her brother said, "it's been an age."
4 months, she said almost unthinkingly, as if some little part of her brain required absolute accuracy, even when it hardly mattered.
"Heavens, that is a long time," Kate said.
"Oh, we will leave you now, Lord Fensworth. I'm sure you and your sister wish to have a few moments of privacy."
There is no rush, Fensworth said, his eyes flickering briefly to Miss Watson. "I would not wish to be rude, and I haven't yet had the opportunity to thank you for your hospitality."
"It wouldn't be rude at all," Gregory put in, anticipating a swift departure from the salon with Miss Watson on his arm. Lord Fensworth turned and blinked, as if he'd forgotten Gregory's presence.
Not terribly surprising, as Gregory had remained uncharacteristically silent through the exchange.
Pray do not trouble yourself, the Earl said. Lucy and I will have our conversation later.
Richard, Lucy said, looking somewhat concerned, are you certain? I was not expecting you, and if there is anything amiss...
But her brother shook his head. Nothing that cannot wait. Uncle Robert wishes to speak with you. He asked me to bring you home.
Now?
He did not specify, Fensworth replied.
But Lady Bridgerton has very graciously asked us to remain until Friday, and I agreed.
That is, he cleared his throat, assuming you wish to remain.
Of course, Lucy replied, looking confused and adrift. But I... Well, Uncle Robert...
We should leave, Miss Watson said firmly. Lucy, you should have a moment with your brother.
Lucy looked at her brother, but he had taken advantage of Miss Watson's entry into the conversation by looking at her, and he said,
And how are you, Hermione? It's been far too long.
4 months, Lucy said.
Miss Watson laughed and smiled warmly at the Earl.
I'm well, thank you. And Lucy is correct as always. We last spoke in January, when you visited us at school.
Fensworth dipped his chin in acknowledgement. How could I have forgotten? It was such a pleasant few days.
Gregory would have bet his right arm that Fensworth had known down to the minute how long it had been since he had last laid eyes on Miss Watson. But the lady in question was clearly oblivious to the infatuation, because she just smiled and said,
It was, wasn't it? It was so sweet of you to take us ice skating. You're always such good company.
Good God! How could she be so oblivious? There was no way she would have been so encouraging had she realized the nature of the Earl's feeling for her. Gregory was certain of it. But while it was obvious that Miss Watson was extremely fond of Lord Fensworth, there was no indication that she held him in any sort of romantic esteem. Gregory consoled himself with the knowledge that the two had certainly known each other for years, and naturally she would be friendly with Fensworth, given how close she was to Lady Lucinda. Practically brother and sister, really. And speaking of Lady Lucinda, Gregory turned in her direction and was not surprised to find that she was frowning. Her brother, who had travelled at least a day to reach her side, now seemed in no hurry whatsoever to speak with her. And indeed, everyone else had fallen silent as well. Gregory watched the awkward tableau with interest. Everyone seemed to be glancing about, waiting to see who might speak next. Even Lady Lucinda, whom no one could call shy, seemed not to know what to say.
Lord Fensworth, Kate said, thankfully breaking the silence, you must be famished. Will you have some breakfast?
I would appreciate that greatly, Lady Bridgerton.
Kate turned to Lady Lucinda.
I did not see you at breakfast either. Will you have something now?
Gregory thought of the massive tray Miss Watson had brought up for her, and wondered how much of it she'd managed to wolf down before having to come to meet her brother.
Oh, of course, Lady Lucinda murmured. I should like to keep Richard company in any case.
Miss Watson, Gregory cut in smoothly, would you care to take a turn about the gardens? I believe the peonies are in bloom, and those stalky blue things. I always forget what they're called.
Delphinium.
It was Lady Lucinda, of course. He'd known she would not be able to resist. And then she turned and looked at him, her eyes narrowing ever so slightly.
I told you that the other day.
So you did, he murmured. I've never had much of a head for details.
Oh, Lucy remembers everything, Miss Watson said breezily, and I would be delighted to view the gardens with you, that is, if Lucy and Richard do not mind.
Both assured her that they did not, although Gregory was quite certain he saw a flash of disappointment and, dare he say it, irritation in Lord Fensworth's eyes. Gregory smiled.
I shall find you back in our room, Miss Watson said to Lucy.
The other girl nodded, and with a feeling of triumph that was nothing quite like besting one's competition, Gregory placed Miss Watson's hand in the crook of his elbow and led her out of the room. It was going to be an excellent morning after all. Lucy followed her brother and Lady Bridgerton to the breakfast room, which she did not mind one bit, as she had not had a chance to eat very much of what Hermione brought her earlier. But it did mean that she had to endure a full 30 minutes of meaningless conversation while her brain raced about, imagining all sorts of disasters that could be responsible for her unexpected summons home. Richard couldn't very well speak to her about anything important, with Lady Bridgerton and half of the house party blithering on about coddled eggs and the recent rainfall. So Lucy waited uncomplainingly while he finished. He'd always been an annoyingly slow eater. And then she tried her best not to lose her patience as they strolled out to the side lawn, Richard first asking her about school, then Hermione, and then Hermione's mother, and then her upcoming debut, and then Hermione again, with a side tangent to Hermione's brother, whom he had apparently run across in Cambridge. And then it was back to the debut, and to what extent she was to share it with Hermione. Until finally, Lucy halted in her tracks, planted her hands on her hips, and demanded that he tell her why he was there. "I told you," he said, not quite meeting her eyes. "Uncle Robert wishes to speak with you." But why? It was not a question with an obvious answer. Uncle Robert hadn't cared to speak with her more than a handful of times in the past 10 years. If he was planning to start now, there was a reason for it. Richard cleared his throat a number of times before finally saying, "Well, Luce, I think he plans to marry off." "Straight away," Lucy whispered. And she didn't know why she was so surprised. She'd known this was coming. She'd been practically engaged for years. And she had told Hermione on more than one occasion that a season for her was really quite foolish. Why bother with the expense when she was just going to marry Hazelby at the end? But now, suddenly, she didn't want to do it. At least, not so soon. She didn't want to go from schoolgirl to wife with nothing in between. She wasn't asking for adventure. She didn't even want adventure. Truly, she wasn't the sort. She wasn't asking for very much. Just a few months of freedom, of laughter, of dancing breathlessly, spinning so fast that the candle flames streaked into long snakes of light. Maybe she was practical. Maybe she was that old Lucy, as so many had called her at Miss Moss's. But she liked to dance, and she wanted to do it. Now, before she was old, before she became Hazelby's wife... "I don't know when," Richard said, looking down at her with, was it regret? Oh, why would it be regret? "As soon, I think," he said. "Uncle Robert seems somewhat eager to have it done." Lucy just stared at him, wondering why she couldn't stop thinking about dancing. Couldn't stop picturing herself in a gown of silvery blue, magical and radiant, in the arms of... Oh! She clapped her hand to her mouth, as if that could somehow silence her thoughts. "What is it?" "Nothing," she said, shaking her head. Her daydreams did not have a face. They could not. And so she said it again, more firmly. "It was nothing, nothing at all." Her brother stooped to examine a wildflower that had somehow missed the discerning eyes of Aubrey Hall's gardeners. It was small, blue, and just beginning to open. "It's lovely, isn't it?" Richard murmured. Lucy nodded. Richard had always loved flowers, wildflowers in particular. They were different in that way, she realized. She had always preferred the order of a neatly arranged bed, each bloom in its place, each pattern carefully and lovingly maintained. But now? She looked down at that little flower, small and delicate, defiantly sprouting where it didn't belong. And she decided that she liked the wild ones too. "I know you were meant to have a season," Richard said apologetically. "But truly, is it so very dreadful? You never really wanted one, did you?" Lucy swallowed. "No," she said, because she knew it was what he wanted to hear, and she didn't want him to feel any worse than he already did. And she hadn't really cared one way or the other about a season in London, at least not until recently. Richard pulled the little blue wildflower out by the roots, looked at it quizzically, and stood. "Cheer up, Luce," he said, chucking her lightly on the chin. "Hazelby is not a bad sort. You won't mind being married to him." "I know," she said softly. "He won't hurt you," he added, and he smiled that slightly false sort of smile, the kind that was meant to be reassuring and somehow never was. "I didn't think he would," Lucy said, an edge of something creeping into her voice. "Why would you bring such a thing up?" "No reason at all," Richard said quickly. but I know that it is a concern for many women. Not all men give their wives the respect with which Hazelby would treat you."
Lucy nodded. Of course, it was true. She'd heard stories. They'd all heard stories.
"It won't be so bad," Richard said. "You'll probably even like him. He's quite agreeable."
Agreeable. It was a good thing. Better than disagreeable.
"He'll be the Earl of Davenport some day," Richard added, even though, of course, she already knew that. "You'll be a countess. Quite a prominent one."
There was that. Her school friends had always said she was so lucky to have her prospects already settled and with such a lofty result. She was the daughter of an earl and the sister of an earl, and she was destined to be the wife of one as well. She had nothing to complain about. Nothing. But she felt so empty. It wasn't a bad feeling precisely, but it was disconcerting and unfamiliar. She felt rootless. She felt adrift. She felt not like herself, and that was the worst of it.
"You're not surprised, are you, Luce?" Richard asked. "You knew this was coming. We all did."
She nodded. "It is nothing," she said, trying to sound her usual matter-of-fact self. "It is only that it never felt quite so immediate."
"Of course," Richard said. "It is a surprise, that is all. Once you grow used to the idea, it'll all seem so much better, normal even. After all, you've always known you were to be Hazelwood's wife, and think of how much you will enjoy planning the wedding. Uncle Robert says it's to be a grand affair, in London, I believe. Davenport insists upon it."
Lucy felt herself nod. She did rather like to plan things. There was such a pleasant feeling of being in charge that came along with it.
"Hermione can be your attendant as well," Richard added.
"Of course," Lucy murmured, "because really, who else would she choose?"
"Is there a colour that doesn't favour her?" Richard asked with a frown. "Because you will be the bride, you don't want to be overshadowed."
Lucy rolled her eyes. "That was a brother for you." He seemed not to realise that he had insulted her, though, and Lucy supposed she shouldn't have been surprised. Hermione's beauty was so legendary that no one took insult with an unfavourable comparison. One would have to be delusional to think otherwise.
"I can't very well put her in black," Lucy said. It was the only hue she could think of that turned Hermione a bit sallow.
No, you couldn't, could you?" Richard paused, clearly pondering this. And Lucy stared at him in disbelief. Her brother, who had to be regularly informed of what was fashionable and what was not, was actually interested in the shade of Hermione's attendant dress.
"Hermione can wear whatever colour she desires," Lucy decided. And why not? Of all the people who would be in attendance, there was no one who meant more to her than her closest friend.
"Well, that's very kind of you," Richard said. He looked at her thoughtfully.
"You're a good friend, Lucy."
Lucy knew she should have felt complimented, but instead she just wondered why it had taken him so long to realize it. Richard gave her a smile, then looked down at the flower still in his hands. He held it up, twirled it a few times, the stem rolling back and forth between his thumb and index finger. He blinked, his brow furrowing a touch, then he placed the flower in front of her dress. They were the same blue, slightly purple, maybe just a little bit grey.
"You should wear this colour," he said. "You look quite lovely just now."
He sounded a little surprised, so Lucy knew that he was not just saying it.
"Thank you," she said.
She'd always thought the hue made her eyes a bit brighter. Richard was the first person besides Hermione ever to comment on it.
"Perhaps I will." "Shall we walk back to the house?" he asked. "I'm sure you'll wish to tell Hermione everything."
She paused, then shook her head.
"No, thank you. I think I shall remain outside for a short while."
She motioned to a spot near the path that led down to the lake.
"There's a bench not too far away, and the sun feels rather pleasant on my face."
"Are you certain?" Richard squinted up at the sky. "You're always saying you don't want to get freckles."
"I already have freckles, Richard, and I won't be very long."
She hadn't planned to come outside when she'd gone to greet him, so she had not brought her bonnet.
but it was yet early in the day. A few minutes of sunshine would not destroy her complexion. And besides that, she wanted to. Wouldn't it be nice to do something just because she wanted to, and not because it was expected? Richard nodded. I will see you at dinner. I believe it is laid at 1:30. He grinned. You would know. There's nothing like a brother, she grumbled. And there's nothing like a sister. He leaned over and kissed her brow, catching her completely off guard. Oh, Richard, she muttered, aghast at her soppy reaction. She never cried. In fact, she was known for her complete lack of flower-pot tendencies. Go on, he said, with enough affection to send one tear rolling down her cheek. Lucy brushed it away, embarrassed that he'd seen it, embarrassed that she'd done it. Richard squeezed her hand and motioned with his head towards the south lawn. Go stare at the trees and do whatever you need to do. You'll feel better after you've had a few moments to yourself. I don't feel poorly, Lucy said quickly. There is no need for me to feel better. Of course not. You are merely surprised. Exactly. Exactly? Exactly. Really, she was delighted. Really. She'd been waiting for this moment for years. Wouldn't it be nice to have everything settled? She liked order. She liked being settled. It was just the surprise. That was all. Rather like when one saw a friend in an unexpected location and almost didn't recognize her. She hadn't expected the announcement now, here at the Bridgerton house party, and that was the only reason she felt so odd. Really. Chapter 8, in which our heroine learns a truth about her brother, but does not believe it. Our hero learns a secret about Miss Watson, but is not concerned by it, and both learn a truth about themselves, but are not aware of it. An hour later, Gregory was still congratulating himself on the masterful combination of strategy and timing that had led to his outing with Miss Watson. They had had a perfectly lovely time. And Lord Fensworth had... Well, Fensworth may have also had a perfectly lovely time, but if so, it had been in the company of his sister, and not the lovely Hermione Watson. Victory was indeed sweet. As promised, Gregory had taken her on a stroll through the Aubrey Hall Gardens, impressing them both with his stupendous recall of 6 different horticultural names. Delphinium, even, though in truth that was all Lady Lucinda's doing. The others were just to give credit where it was due. Rose, Daisy, Peony, Hyacinth, and Grass. All in all, he thought he'd acquitted himself well. Details had never been his forte, and truly, it was all just a game by that point. Miss Watson appeared to be warming to his company as well. She might not have been sighing and fluttering her lashes, but the veil of polite disinterest was gone, and twice he had even made her laugh. She hadn't made him laugh, but he wasn't so certain she'd been trying to, and besides, he had certainly smiled, on more than one occasion, which was a good thing, really. It was rather pleasant to once again have his wits about him. He was no longer struck by that punched-in-the-chest feeling, which one would think had to be good for his respiratory health. He was discovering, or rather enjoying, breathing, an undertaking he seemed to find difficult while gazing upon the back of Miss Watson's neck. Gregory frowned, pausing in his solitary jaunt down to the lake. It was a rather odd reaction, and surely he'd seen the back of her neck that morning. Hadn't she run ahead to smell one of the flowers? Perhaps not. He couldn't quite recall. Good day, Mr. Bridgerton. He turned, surprised to see Lady Lucinda sitting by herself on a nearby stone bench. It was an odd location for a bench, he had always thought, facing nothing but a bunch of trees, but maybe that was the point. Turning one's back on the house and its many inhabitants. His sister Francesca had often said that after a day or two with the entire Bridgerton family, trees could be quite good company. Lady Lucinda smiled faintly in greeting, and it struck him that she didn't look quite herself. Her eyes seemed tired, and her posture was not quite straight. She looks vulnerable, he thought, rather unexpectedly. Her brother must have brought unhappy tidings. You're wearing a somber expression, he said, walking politely to her side. May I join you? She nodded, offering him a bit of a smile. But it wasn't a smile, not quite. He took a seat beside her. Did you have an opportunity to visit with your brother? She nodded. He passed along some family news. It was not important. Gregory tilted his head as he regarded her. She was lying, clearly. But he did not press further. If she'd wanted to share, she would have done. And besides, it wasn't his business in any case. He was curious, though. She stared off in the distance, presumably at some tree. It's quite pleasant here. It was an oddly bland statement coming from her. Yes, he said. The lake is just a short walk beyond those trees. I often come in this direction when I wish to think. She turned suddenly. You do? Why are you so surprised? I don't know, she shrugged. I suppose you don't seem the sort. To think? Well, really. Of course not, she said, giving him a peevish look. I meant the sort who needed to get away to do so. Pardon my presumptuousness, but you don't seem the sort either. She thought about that for a moment. I'm not. He chuckled at that. You must have had quite a conversation with your brother. She blinked in surprise, but she didn't elaborate, which again didn't seem like her. What are you here to think about? She asked. He opened his mouth to reply, but before he could utter a word, she said, Hermione, I suppose. There seemed little point in denying it. Your brother is in love with her. That seemed to snap her out of her fog. Richard, don't be daft. Gregory looked at her in disbelief. Well, I can't believe you haven't seen it. I can't believe you have. For heaven's sake, she thinks of him as a brother. That may well be true, but he does not return the sentiment. But he halted her with a lifted hand. Now, now, Lady Lucinda, I dare say I have been witness to more fools in love than you have. The laughter quite literally exploded from her mouth. Mr. Bridgerton, she said, once she was able, I've been constant companion these last 3 years to Hermione Watson. Hermione Watson, she added, just in case he hadn't understood her meaning. Trust me when I tell you there is no one who has been witness to more lovesick fools than I. For a moment, Gregory did not know how to respond. She did have a point. Richard is not in love with Hermione, she said with a dismissive shake of her head and a snort. A ladylike one, but still, she snorted at him. I beg to differ, he said, because he had 7 siblings, and he certainly did not know how to gracefully bow out of an argument. He can't be in love with her, she said, sounding quite certain of her statement. There is someone else. Oh, really? Gregory didn't even bother to get his hopes up. Really? He's always nattering on about a girl he met through one of his friends, she said. I think it was someone's sister. I can't recall her name. Mary, perhaps. Mary. He knew that Fensworth had no imagination. Ergo, Lady Lucinda continued, he is not in love with Hermione. At least she seemed rather more like herself. The world seemed a bit steadier with Lucy Abernathy yipping along like a terrier. He'd felt almost off balance when she'd been staring morosely at the trees. Believe what you will, Gregory said with a lofty sigh, but know this, your brother will be nursing a broken heart ere long. Oh, really, she scoffed, because you're so convinced of your own success? Because I'm convinced of his lack of it. You don't even know him, and now you're defending him. Just moments ago you said he wasn't interested. He's not, she bit her lip, but he's my brother, and if he were interested, I would have to support him, wouldn't you think? Gregory lifted a brow. My, how quickly your loyalties shift. She looked almost apologetic. He is an earl, and you are not. You shall make a fine society, Mama. Her back stiffened. I beg your pardon? Auctioning your friend off to the highest bidder. You'll be well practiced by the time you have a daughter. She jumped to her feet, her eyes flashing with anger and indignation. That is a terrible thing to say. My most important consideration has always been Hermione's happiness, and if she can be made happy by an earl who happens to be my brother,
Oh, brilliant. Now she's going to try to match Hermione with Fensworth. Well done, Gregory. Well done indeed.
She can be made happy by me, he said, rising to his feet. And it was true. He'd made her laugh twice this morning, even if she had not done the same for him.
Of course she can, Lady Lucinda said. And heaven, she probably will if you don't muck it up. Richard is too young to marry anyway. He's only 22.
Gregory eyed her curiously.
Now she sounded as if she were back to him as the best candidate. What was she about anyway?
And, she added, impatiently tucking a lock of her dark blonde hair behind her ear when the wind whipped it into her face, he is not in love with her. I'm quite certain of it.
Neither one of them seemed to have anything to add to that, so since they were both already on their feet, Gregory motioned toward the house.
Shall we return?
She nodded, and they departed at a leisurely pace.
This still does not solve the problem of Mr. Edmonds, Gregory remarked.
She gave him a funny look.
What was that for? He demanded.
And she actually giggled.
Well, perhaps not a giggle, but she did do that breathy thing with her nose people did when they were rather amused.
It was nothing, she said, still smiling. I'm rather impressed, actually, that you didn't pretend to not remember his name.
What, should I have called him Mr. Edwards, and then Mr. Ellington, and then Mr. Edifice, and...
Lucy gave him an arch look. You would have lost all of my respect, I assure you.
The horror, oh, the horror, he said, laying one hand over his heart.
She glanced at him over her shoulder with a mischievous smile.
It was a near miss.
He looked unconcerned.
I'm a terrible shot, but I do know how to dodge a bullet.
Now that made her curious.
I've never known a man who would admit to being a bad shot.
He shrugged.
There are some things one simply can't avoid. I shall always be the Bridgerton who can be bested at close range by his sister.
The one you told me about.
All of them, he admitted.
Oh.
She frowned. There ought to be some sort of prescribed statement for such a situation. What did one say when a gentleman confessed to a shortcoming? She couldn't recall ever hearing one do so before, but surely sometime in the course of history some gentleman had, and someone would have had to make a reply.
She blinked, waiting for something meaningful to come to mind. Nothing did.
And then?
Hermione can't dance.
It just popped out of her mouth, with no direction whatsoever from her head.
Good gracious, that was meant to be meaningful.
He stopped, turning to her with a curious expression. Or maybe it was more that he was startled.
Probably both.
And he said the only thing she imagined one could say under the circumstances.
I beg your pardon?
Lucy repeated it, since she couldn't take it back.
She can't dance. That's why she won't dance. Because she can't.
And then she waited for a hole to open up in the ground so that she could jump into it. It didn't help that he was presently staring at her as if she were slightly deranged. She managed a feeble smile, which was all that filled the impossibly long moment, until he finally said,
"There must be a reason you're telling this to me."
Lucy let out a nervous exhale. He didn't sound angry, more curious than anything else, and she hadn't meant to insult Hermione. And when he said he couldn't shoot, it just seemed to make an odd sort of sense to tell him that Hermione couldn't dance. It fit, really. Men were supposed to shoot, and women were supposed to dance, and trusty best friends were supposed to keep their foolish mouths shut. Clearly all three of them needed a bit of instruction.
I thought to make you feel better, Lucy finally said, because you can't shoot.
Oh, I can shoot, he said. That's the easy part. I just can't aim.
Lucy grinned. She couldn't help herself.
I could show you.
His head swung around.
Oh, Gad, don't tell me you know how to shoot.
She perked up.
Quite well, actually.
He shook his head.
The day only needed this.
It's an admirable skill, she protested.
I'm sure it is, but I've already four females in my life who can best me. The last thing I need is... Oh, Gad again, please don't say Miss Watson is a crack shot as well.
Lucy blinked.
Do you know, I'm not sure.
Well, there is still hope there, then.
Isn't that peculiar? She murmured.
He gave her a deadpan look.
That I have hope?
No, that... She couldn't say it.
Good heavens, it sounded silly even to her.
Ah, then, you must think it peculiar that you don't know whether Miss Watson can shoot.
And there it was. He guessed it, anyway.
Yes, she admitted.
But then again, why would I? Marksmanship wasn't part of the curriculum at Miss Moss's.
To the great relief of gentlemen everywhere, I assure you.
He gave her a lopsided smile.
Who did teach you?
My father, she said. And it was strange because her lips parted before she answered. For a moment she thought she'd been surprised by the question, but it hadn't been that. She'd been surprised by her answer.
Good heavens, he responded. Were you even out of leading strings?
Just barely, Lucy said, still puzzling over her odd reaction. It was probably just because she didn't often think of her father. He had been gone so long that there weren't many questions to which the late Earl of Fensworth constituted the reply.
He thought it an important skill, she continued, even for girls. Our home is near the Dover coast, and there were always smugglers. Most of them were friendly. Everyone knew who they were, even the magistrate.
He must have enjoyed French brandy, Mr. Bridgerton murmured. Lucy smiled in recollection.
As did my father.
But not all of the smugglers were known to us. Some, I'm sure, were quite dangerous, and... She leaned toward him. One really couldn't say something like this without leaning in. Where would the fun be in that?
And? He prompted.
She lowered her voice.
I think there were spies.
In Dover? 10 years ago?
Absolutely there were spies, although I do wonder at the advisability of arming the infant population.
Lucy laughed.
I was a bit older than that. I believe we began when I was 7. Richard continued the lessons once my father had passed on.
I suppose he's a brilliant marksman as well.
She nodded ruefully.
Sorry.
They resumed their stroll toward the house.
I won't challenge him to a duel, then, he said somewhat offhandedly.
I'd rather you didn't.
He turned to her with an expression that could only be called sly.
Why, Lady Lucinda, I do believe you have just declared your affection for me.
Her mouth flapped open like an inarticulate fish.
I have... What could possibly lead you to that conclusion?
And why did her cheeks feel so suddenly hot?
It could never be a fair match, he said, sounding remarkably at ease with his shortcomings. Although, in all truth, I don't know there is a man in Britain with whom I could have a fair match.
She still felt somewhat light-headed after her previous surprise, but she managed to say,
I'm sure you overstayed.
No, he said almost casually.
Your brother would surely leave a bullet in my shoulder.
He paused, considering this, assuming he wasn't of a mind to put one in my heart.
Oh, don't be silly.
He shrugged. Regardless, you must be more concerned for my welfare than you were aware.
I'm concerned for everybody's welfare, she muttered.
Yes, he murmured.
You would be.
Lucy drew back.
Why does that sound like an insult?
Did it? I can assure you it wasn't meant to. She stared at him suspiciously for so long that he finally lifted his hands in surrender.
It was a compliment, I swear to you, he said.
Grudgingly given.
Not at all.
He glanced over at her, quite obviously unable to suppress a smile.
You're laughing at me.
No, he insisted. And then, of course, he laughed.
Sorry. Now I am.
You could at least attempt to be kind and say that you are laughing with me.
I could,
he grinned, and his eyes turned positively devilish.
But it would be a lie.
She almost smacked him on the shoulder.
Oh, you are terrible.
Bane of my brother's existence, I assure you.
Really?
Lucy had never been the bane of anyone's existence, and right then it sounded rather appealing.
How so?
Oh, the same as always. I need to settle down, find purpose, apply myself.
Get married?
Well, that too.
Is that why you're so enamored of Hermione?
He paused just for a moment.
But it was there.
Lucy felt it.
No, he said. It was something else entirely.
Of course, she said quickly, feeling foolish for having asked. He told her all about it the night before, about love just happening, having no choice in the matter. He didn't want Hermione to please his brother. He wanted Hermione because he couldn't not want her. And it made her feel just a little bit more alone.
"Oweir returned," he said, motioning to the door to the drawing room, which she had not even realized they had reached.
"Yes, of course." She looked at the door, then looked at him, then wondered why it felt so awkward now that they had to say goodbye.
"Thank you for the company."
"The pleasure was all mine."
Lucy took a step toward the door, and then turned back to face him with a little, "Oh."
His brows rose. "Is something wrong?"
"No, but I must apologize. I turned you quite around. You said you liked to go that way, down toward the lake, when you need to think, and you never got to."
He looked at her curiously, his head tilting ever so slightly to the side, and his eyes, oh, she wished she could describe what she saw there, because she didn't understand it, didn't quite comprehend how it made her tilt her head in concert with his, how it made her feel as if the moment was stretching, longer, longer until it could last a lifetime.
"Didn't you wish for time for yourself?" she asked softly, so softly it was almost a whisper.
Slowly he shook his head.
"I did," he said, sounding as if the words were coming to him at that very moment, as if the thought itself was new and not quite what he had expected.
"I did," he said again, "but now I don't."
She looked at him, and he looked at her, and the thought quite suddenly popped into her head. He doesn't know why. He didn't know why he no longer wanted to be by himself. And she didn't know why that was meaningful.
Chapter 9, in which our story takes a turn. The following night was the masked ball. It was to be a grand affair. Not too grand, of course. Gregory's brother Anthony wouldn't stand for that much disruption of his comfortable life in the country. But nevertheless, it was to be the pinnacle of the house party events. All the guests would be there, along with another 100 or so extra attendees, some down from London, others straight from their homes in the country. Every last bedchamber had been aired out and prepared for occupants, and even with that, a good number of partygoers were staying at the homes of neighbours, or, for an unlucky few, at nearby inns. Kate's original intention had been to throw a fancy dress party. She'd been longing to fashion herself as Medusa, to the surprise of no one. But she had finally abandoned the idea after Anthony informed her that if she had her way with this, he would choose his own costume. The look he gave her was apparently enough for her to declare an immediate retreat. She later told Gregory that he had still not forgiven her for costuming him as Cupid at the Billington Fancy Dress Ball the previous year.
"Costume too cherubic?" Gregory murmured.
"But on the bright side," she had replied, "I now know exactly how he must have looked as a baby. Quite darling, actually."
"Until this moment," Gregory said with a wince, "I'm not sure I understood exactly how much my brother loves you."
"Quite a bit,"
she smiled and nodded.
"Quite a bit indeed."
And so a compromise was reached. No costumes, just masks. Anthony didn't mind that one bit, as it would enable him to abandon his duties as host entirely if he so chose. Who would notice his absence, after all? And Kate set to work designing a mask with Medusish snakes jumping out in every direction. She was unsuccessful. At Kate's insistence, Gregory arrived in the ballroom at precisely 8:30, the ball's announced start. It meant, of course, that the only guests in attendance were he, his brother, and Kate. But there were enough servants milling about to make it seem not quite so empty, and Anthony declared himself delighted with the gathering.
"It's a much better party without everyone else jostling about," he said happily.
"When did you grow so opposed to social discourse?" Gregory asked, plucking a champagne flute off a proffered tray.
"It's not that at all," Anthony answered with a shrug. "I've simply lost patience for stupidity of any kind."
"He's not aging well," his wife confirmed. If Anthony took any exception to her comment, he made no show of it.
"I simply refuse to deal with idiots," he told Gregory.
His face brightened. It has cut my social obligations in half.
What's the point of possessing a title if one cannot refuse one's invitations? Gregory murmured wryly.
Indeed, was Antony's reply. Indeed.
Gregory turned to Kate.
You have no arguments with this?
Oh, I have many arguments, she answered, craning her neck as she examined the ballroom for any last-minute disasters.
I always have arguments.
It's true, Antony said.
But she knows when she cannot win.
Kate turned to Gregory, even though her words were quite clearly directed at her husband.
What I know is how to choose my battles.
Pay her no mind, Antony said. That is just her way of admitting defeat.
And yet he continues, Kate said to no one in particular, even though he knows that I always win in the end.
Antony shrugged and gave his brother an uncharacteristically sheepish grin.
She's right, of course. He finished his drink. But there's no point in surrendering without a fight.
Gregory could only smile. Two bigger fools in love had yet to be born. It was endearing to watch, even if it did leave him with a slight pang of jealousy.
How fares your courtship? Kate asked him.
Antony's ears perked up.
Your courtship? He echoed,
his face assuming its usual obey me, I am the Viscount expression.
Who is she?
Gregory shot Kate an aggravated look. He had not shared his feelings with his brother. He wasn't sure why, surely in part because he hadn't actually seen much of Antony in the past few days. But there was more. It just didn't seem like the sort of thing one wished to share with one's brother. Especially one who was considerably more father than brother. Not to mention, if he didn't succeed. Well, he didn't particularly wish for his family to know. But he would succeed. Why was he doubting himself? Even earlier, when Miss Watson was still treating him like a minor nuisance, he had been sure of the outcome. It made no sense that now, with their friendship growing, he should suddenly doubt himself. Kate predictably ignored Gregory's irritation.
I just adore it when you don't know something, she said to her husband. Especially when I do.
Antony turned to Gregory.
You're sure you want to marry one of these?
Not that one, precisely, Gregory answered. Something rather like it, though. Kate's expression turned somewhat pinched at having been called an it, but she recovered quickly, turning to Antony and saying,
He has declared his love for...
She let one of her hands flutter in the air as if waving away a foolish idea.
Oh, never mind. I think I won't tell you.
Her phrasing was a bit suspect. She probably had meant to keep it from him all along. Gregory wasn't sure which he found more satisfying, that Kate had honored his secret, or that Antony had been flummoxed.
See if you can guess,
Kate said to Antony with an arch smile.
That should lend your evening a sense of purpose.
Antony turned to Gregory with a level stare.
Who is it?
Gregory shrugged. He always sided with Kate when it came to thwarting his brother.
Far be it from me to deny you a sense of purpose,
Antony muttered.
Arrogant pup.
And Gregory knew that the evening was off to a fine start. The guests began to trickle in, and within an hour the ballroom sang with the low buzz of conversation and laughter. Everyone seemed a bit more adventurous with a mask on the face. And soon the banter grew more risque, the jokes more ribald. And the laughter, it was difficult to put the right word on it. But it was different. There was more than merriment in the air. There was an edge to the excitement. As if the partygoers somehow knew that this was the night to be daring, to break free. Because in the morning, no one would know. All in all, Gregory liked nights like these. By 9:30, however, he was growing frustrated. He could not be positive, but he was almost certain that Miss Watson had not made an appearance. Even with a mask, she would find it nearly impossible to keep her identity a secret. Her hair was too startling, too ethereal in the candlelight for her to pass as anyone else. But Lady Lucinda, on the other hand, she would have no trouble blending in. Her hair was certainly a lovely shade of honeyish blonde, but it was nothing unexpected or unique. Half the ladies of the ton probably had hair that colour. He glanced around the ballroom.
Very well, not half. Maybe not even a quarter. but it wasn't the spun moonlight of her friends. He frowned. Miss Watson really ought to have been present by then. As a member of the house party, she need not deal with muddy roads or lame horses or even the long line of carriages waiting out front to deliver the guests. And while he doubted she would have wished to arrive as early as he had done, surely she would not come over an hour late. If nothing else, Lady Lucinda would not have tolerated it. She was clearly a punctual sort, in a good way, as opposed to an insufferable nagging way. He smiled to himself. She wasn't like that. Lady Lucinda was more like Kate, or at least she would be once she was a bit older. Intelligent, no nonsense, just a little bit sly. Rather good fun, actually. She was a good sport, Lady Lucinda was. But he didn't see her among the guests either, or at least he didn't think he did. He couldn't be quite sure. He did see several ladies with hair the approximate shade of hers, but none of them seemed quite right. One of them moved the wrong way, too clunky, maybe even a little bit lumbering. And another was the wrong height. Not very wrong, probably just a few inches. But he could tell. It wasn't she. She was probably wherever Miss Watson was, which he did find somewhat reassuring. Miss Watson could not possibly get into trouble with Lady Lucinda about. His stomach growled, and he decided to abandon his search for the time being and seek instead sustenance. Kate had, as always, provided a hearty selection of food for her guests to nibble upon during the course of the evening. He went directly to the plate of sandwiches. They looked rather like the ones she'd served the night he'd arrived, and he liked those quite well. 10 of them ought to do the trick. He saw a cucumber, a waste of bread if ever he saw one. Cheese? No, not what he was looking for. Perhaps Mr. Bridgerton? Lady Lucinda. He'd know that voice anywhere. He turned. There she was. He congratulated himself. He'd been right about those other masked honey blondes. He definitely hadn't come across her yet this evening. Her eyes widened, and he realized that her mask, covered with slate-blue felt, was the exact color of her eyes. He wondered if Miss Watson had obtained a similar one in green. "It is you, isn't it?" "How did you know?" he returned. She blinked. "I don't know. I just did." Then her lips parted, just enough to reveal a tiny little gleam of white teeth, and she said, "It's Lucy, Lady Lucinda." "I know," he murmured, still looking at her mouth. What was it about masks? It was as if by covering up the top, the bottom was made more intriguing, almost mesmerizing. How was it he hadn't noticed the way her lips tilted ever so slightly up at the corners, or the freckles on her nose? There were 7 of them, precisely 7, all shaped like ovals, except for that last one, which looked rather like Ireland, actually. "Were you hungry?" she asked. He blinked, forced his eyes back to hers. She motioned to the sandwiches. "The ham is very nice, as is the cucumber. I'm not normally partial to cucumber sandwiches. They never seem to satisfy, although I do like the crunch. But these have a bit of soft cheese on them instead of just butter. It was a rather nice surprise." She paused and looked at him, tilting her head to the side as she awaited his reply. And he smiled. He couldn't help it. There was something so uncommonly entertaining about her when she was prattling on about food. He reached out and placed a cucumber sandwich on his plate. "With such a recommendation," he said, "how could I refuse?" "Well, the ham is nice, too, if you don't like it." Again, so like her, wanting everyone to be happy. "Try this, and if you don't like it, try this, or this, or this, or this. And if that doesn't work, have mine." She'd never said it, of course, but somehow he knew she would. She looked down at the serving platter. "I do wish they weren't all mixed up." He looked at her quizzically. "I beg your pardon?" "Well," she said, that singular sort of well that foretold a long and heartfelt explanation. "Don't you think it would have made far more sense to separate the different types of sandwiches? To put each on its own smaller plate? That way, if you found one you liked, you would know exactly where to go to get another.
or... At this she grew even more animated, as if she were attacking a problem of great societal importance. If there was another, consider it. She waved at the platter. There might not be a single ham sandwich left in the stack, and you couldn't very well sift through them all, looking. It would be most impolite. He regarded her thoughtfully, then said, "You like things to be orderly, don't you?" "Oh, I do," she said with feeling. "I really do." Gregory considered his own disorganized ways. He tossed shoes in the wardrobe, left invitations strewn about. The year before, he had released his valet secretary from service for a week to visit his ailing father, and when the poor man had come back, the chaos on Gregory's desk alone had nearly done him in. Gregory looked at Lady Lucinda's earnest expression and chuckled. He'd probably drive her mad in under a week as well. "Do you like the sandwich?" she asked, once he'd taken a bite. "The cucumber." "Very intriguing," he murmured. "I wonder, is food meant to be intriguing?" He finished the sandwich. "I'm not certain." She nodded absently, then said, "The ham is nice." They lapsed into a companionable silence as they glanced out across the room. The musicians were playing a lively waltz, and the ladies' skirts were billowing like silken bells as they spun and twirled. It was impossible to watch the scene and not feel as if the night itself were alive, restless with energy, waiting to make its move. Something would happen that night, Gregory was sure of it. Someone's life would change. If he was lucky, it would be his. His hands began to tingle, his feet too. It was taking everything he had just to stand still. He wanted to move. He wanted to do something. He wanted to set his life in motion, reach out and capture his dreams. He wanted to move. He couldn't stand still. Would you like to dance? He hadn't meant to ask. But he turned, and Lucy was right there beside him, and the words just tumbled out. Her eyes lit up. Even with the mask, he could see that she was delighted. "Yes," she said, almost sighing, as she added, "I love to dance." He took her hand and led her to the floor. The waltz was in full swing, and they quickly found their place in the music. It seemed to lift them, render them as one. Gregory needed only to press his hand at her waist, and she moved exactly as he anticipated. They spun, they twirled, the air rushing past their faces so quickly that they had to laugh. It was perfect. It was breathless. It was as if the music had crept under their skin and was guiding their every movement. And then it was over. So quickly. Too quickly. The music ended, and for a moment they stood, still in each other's arms, still wrapped in the memory of the music. "Oh, that was lovely," Lady Lucinda said, and her eyes shone. Gregory released her and bowed. "You are a superb dancer, Lady Lucinda. I knew you would be." "Thank you, I..." Her eyes snapped to his. "You did?" "I..." Why had he said that? He hadn't meant to say that. "You're quite graceful," he finally said, leading her back to the ballroom's perimeter. Far more graceful than Miss Watson, actually, although that did make sense given what Lucy had said about her friend's dancing ability. "It's in the way you walk," he added, since she seemed to be expecting a more detailed explanation. And that would have to do, since he wasn't about to examine the notion any further. "Oh." And her lips moved, just a little. But it was enough. And it struck him, she looked happy, and he realized that most people didn't. They looked amused or entertained or satisfied. Lady Lucinda looked happy. He rather liked that. "I wonder where Hermione is," she said, looking this way and that. "She didn't arrive with you?" Gregory asked, surprised. "She did, but then we saw Richard, and he asked her to dance." "Not," she added with great emphasis, "because he is in love with her. He was merely being polite. And that is what one does for one's sister's friends." "I have four sisters," he reminded her. "I know." But then he remembered, "I thought Miss Watson does not dance." "She doesn't, but Richard does not know that. No one does, except me. And you." She looked at him with some urgency. "Please, do not tell anyone, I beg you. Hermione would be mortified."
"My lips are sealed," he promised.
"I imagine they went off to find something to drink,"
Lucy said, leaning slightly to one side as she tried to catch a glimpse of the lemonade table.
"Hermione made a comment about being overheated. It's her favourite excuse. It almost always works when someone asks her to dance."
"I don't see them," Gregory said, following her gaze.
"No, you wouldn't."
She turned back to face him, giving her head a little shake.
"I don't know why I was looking. It was some time ago."
"A longer than one can sip at a drink." She chuckled.
"No, Hermione can make a glass of lemonade last an entire evening when she needs to. But I think Richard would have lost patience."
It was Gregory's opinion that her brother would gladly cut off his right arm just for the chance to gaze upon Miss Watson while she pretended to drink lemonade. But there was little point in trying to convince Lucy of that.
"I imagine they decided to take a stroll," Lucy said, quite obviously unconcerned.
But Gregory immediately felt an unease. "Outside?"
She shrugged. "I suppose. They are certainly not here in the ballroom. Hermione cannot hide in a crowd. Her hair, you know."
"But do you think it wise for them to be off alone?" Gregory pressed. Lady Lucinda looked at him as if she couldn't quite understand the urgency in his voice.
"Well, they're hardly off alone," she said. "There are at least 2 dozen people outside. I looked out through the French doors."
Gregory forced himself to stand perfectly still while he considered what to do. Clearly, he needed to find Miss Watson, and quickly, before she was subjected to anything that might be considered irrevocable.
Irrevocable? Jesus! Lives could turn on a single moment. If Miss Watson really was off with Lucy's brother, if someone caught them...
A strange heat began to rise within him, something angry and jealous and entirely unpleasant. Miss Watson might be in danger. Or she might not. Maybe she welcomed Fensworth's advances.
No, no, she did not.
He practically forced the thought down his throat. Miss Watson thought she was in love with that ridiculous Mr. Edmonds, whoever he was. She wouldn't welcome advances from Gregory or Lord Fensworth. But had Lucy's brother seized an opportunity that he had missed? It rankled, lodged itself in his chest like a hot cannonball, this feeling, this emotion, this bloody, awful, pissish Mr. Bridgerton.
Foul. Definitely foul.
Mr. Bridgerton, is something wrong? He moved his head the inch required to face Lady Lucinda, but even so it took several seconds for him to focus on her features. Her eyes were concerned, her mouth pressed into a worried line.
"You don't look well," she said.
"I'm fine," he ground out.
"But fine,"
he positively snapped. She drew back.
"Of course you are."
How had Fensworth done it? How had he got Miss Watson off alone? He was still wet behind the ears, for God's sake, barely out of university, and never come down to London. And Gregory was, well, more experienced than that. He should have been paying more attention. He should never have allowed this.
"Perhaps I'll look for Hermione," Lucy said, inching away. "I can see that you would prefer to be alone."
No, he blurted out, with a bit more force than was strictly polite. "I will join you. We shall search together."
"Do you think that's wise?"
"Why wouldn't it be wise?"
"I don't know."
She stopped, stared at him with wide, unblinking eyes, finally saying,
"I just don't think it is. You yourself just questioned the wisdom of Richard and Hermione going off together.
You certainly cannot search the house by yourself."
"Of course not," she said, as if he were foolish for even having suggested it. "I was going to find Lady Bridgerton."
"Kate? Good God! Don't do that," he said quickly, and perhaps a bit disdainfully as well, although that hadn't been his intention. But she clearly took umbrage, because her voice was clipped as she asked,
"And why not?"
He leaned in, his tone low and urgent. "If Kate finds them, and they are not as they should be, they'll be married in less than a fortnight. Mark my words."
"Don't be absurd. Of course they will be as they should," she hissed.
And it took him aback, actually, because it never occurred to him that she might stand up for herself with quite so much vigour.
"Hermione would never behave in an untoward manner," she continued furiously. "And neither would Richard, for that matter. He's my brother. My brother.
He loves her, Gregory said simply.
No, he doesn't.
Good God, she looked ready to explode.
And even if he did, she railed on, which he does not, he would never dishonour her. Never. He wouldn't. He wouldn't...
He wouldn't what? She swallowed.
He wouldn't do that to me.
Gregory could not believe her naivety. He's not thinking of you, Lady Lucinda. In fact, I believe it would be safe to say that you have not crossed his mind even once.
That's a terrible thing to say, Gregory shrugged.
He's a man in love, hence he's a man insensible.
Oh, is that how it works? She retorted. Does that render you insensible as well?
No, he said tersely, and he realized it was actually true. He had already grown accustomed to this strange fervour. He'd regained his equilibrium, and as a gentleman of considerably more experience, he was, even when Miss Watson was not an issue, more easily in possession of his wits than Fensworth. Lady Lucinda gave him a look of disdainful impatience.
Richard is not in love with her. I don't know how many ways I can explain that to you.
You're wrong, he said flatly. He'd been watching Fensworth for 2 days. He'd been watching him watching Miss Watson, laughing at her jokes, fetching her a cool drink, picking a wildflower, tucking it behind her ear. If that wasn't love, then Richard Abernathy was the most attentive, caring, and unselfish older brother in the history of man. And as an older brother himself, one who had frequently been pressed into service, dancing attendance upon his sister's friends, Gregory could categorically say that there did not exist an older brother with such levels of thoughtfulness and devotion. One loved one's sister, of course, but one did not sacrifice one's every waking minute for the sake of her best friend without some sort of compensation, unless a pathetic and unrequited love factored into the equation.
I am not wrong, Lady Lucinda said, looking very much as if she would like to cross her arms. And I'm getting Lady Bridgerton.
Gregory closed his hand around her wrist. That would be a mistake of magnificent proportions. She yanked, but he did not let go.
Don't patronize me, she hissed.
I'm not. I'm instructing you. Her mouth fell open.
Really, truly, flappingly open.
Gregory would have enjoyed the sight, were he not so furious with everything else in the world just then.
You are insufferable, she said, once she'd recovered.
He shrugged. Occasionally.
And delusional.
Well done, Lady Lucinda. As one of eight, Gregory could not help but admire any well-placed quip or retort. But I would be far more likely to admire your verbal skills if I were not trying to stop you from doing something monumentally stupid. She looked at him through narrowed eyes, and then she said,
I don't care to speak to you any longer.
Ever?
I'm getting Lady Bridgerton, she announced.
You're getting me. What is the occasion? It was the last voice Gregory wanted to hear. He turned. Kate was standing in front of them both, regarding the tableau with a single lifted brow. And no one spoke. Kate glanced pointedly at Gregory's hand, still on Lady Lucinda's wrist. He dropped it, quickly stepping back.
Is there something I should know about? Kate asked, and her voice was that perfectly awful mix of cultured inquiry and moral authority.
Gregory was reminded that his sister-in-law could be a formidable presence when she so chose. Lady Lucinda, of course, spoke immediately.
Mr. Bridgerton seems to feel that Hermione might be in danger.
Kate's demeanour changed instantly.
Danger? Here?
No, Gregory ground out, although what he really meant was, I am going to kill you, Lady Lucinda, to be precise.
I haven't seen her for some time, the annoying twit continued. We arrived together, but that was nearly an hour ago.
Kate glanced about, her gaze finally settling on the doors leading outside.
Couldn't she be in the garden?
Much of the party has moved abroad.
Lady Lucinda shook her head. I didn't see her. I looked.
Gregory said nothing. It was as if he were watching the world destructing before his very eyes. And really, what could he possibly say to stop it?
Not outside, Kate said. I didn't think anything was amiss, Lady Lucinda said, rather officiously.
but Mr. Bridgerton was instantly concerned.
He was.
Kate's head snapped to face him.
You were? Why?
May we speak of this at another time? Gregory ground out. Kate immediately dismissed him and looked squarely at Lucy. Why was he concerned? Lucy swallowed, and then she whispered,
I think she might be with my brother.
Kate blanched.
That is not good.
Richard would never do anything improper, Lucy insisted. I promise you.
He is in love with her, Kate said.
Gregory said nothing. Vindication had never felt less sweet. Lucy looked from Kate to Gregory, her expression almost bordering on panic.
No, she whispered. No, you're wrong.
I'm not wrong, Kate said in a serious voice. And we need to find them, quickly. She turned and immediately strode toward the door. Gregory followed, his long legs keeping pace with ease. Lady Lucinda seemed momentarily frozen, and then, jumping into action, she scurried after them both.
He would never do anything against Hermione's will, she said urgently. I promise you.
Kate stopped, turned around, looked at Lucy, her expression frank and perhaps a little sad as well, as if she recognized that the younger woman was, in that moment, losing a bit of her innocence, and that she, Kate, regretted having to be the one to deliver the blow.
He might not have to, Kate said quietly.
Force her. Kate didn't say it, but the words hung in the air all the same.
He might not have... What do you...
Gregory saw the moment she realized it. Her eyes, always so changeable, had never looked more grey. Stricken.
We have to find them, Lucy whispered.
Kate nodded. And the three of them silently left the room. Chapter 10, in which love is triumphant, but not for our hero and heroine. Lucy followed Lady Bridgerton and Gregory into the hallway, trying to stem the anxiety she felt building within her. Her belly felt queer, her breath not quite right, and her mind wouldn't quite clear. She needed to focus on the matter at hand. She knew she needed to give her full attention to the search, but it felt as if a portion of her mind kept pulling away, dizzy, panicked, and unable to escape a horrible sense of foreboding, which she did not understand. Didn't she want Hermione to marry her brother? Hadn't she just told Mr. Bridgerton that the match, while improbable, would be superb? Hermione would be her sister in name, not just in feeling, and Lucy could not imagine anything more fitting. But still, she felt uneasy, and a little bit angry as well. And guilty, of course. Because what right did she have to feel angry?
We should search separately, Mr. Bridgerton directed once they had turned several corners, and the sounds of the masked ball had receded into the distance.
He yanked off his mask, and the two ladies followed suit, leaving all three on a small lamp table that was tucked into a recessed nook in the hallway. Lady Bridgerton shook her head.
We can't. You certainly can't find them by yourself, she said to him. I don't wish to even ponder the consequences of Miss Watson being alone with two unmarried gentlemen.
Not to mention his reaction, Lucy thought. Mr. Bridgerton struck her as an even-tempered man. She wasn't sure that he could come across the pair alone without thinking he had to spout off about honour and the defence of virtue, which always led to disaster. Always. Although, given the depth of his feelings for Hermione, his reaction might be a little less honour and virtue, and a little more jealous rage. Even worse, while Mr. Bridgerton might lack the ability to shoot a straight bullet, Lucy had no doubt that he could blacken an eye with lethal speed.
And she can't be alone, Lady Bridgerton continued, motioning in Lucy's direction.
It's dark, and empty. The gentlemen are wearing masks, for heaven's sake. It does loosen the conscience.
I wouldn't know where to look either,
Lucy added. It was a large house. She'd been there nearly a week, but she doubted she'd even seen half of it.
We shall remain together, Lady Bridgerton said firmly.
Mr. Bridgerton looked as if he wanted to argue, but he held his temper in check, and instead bit off.
Fine. Let's not waste time, then.
He strode off, his long legs establishing a pace that neither of the two women was going to find easy to keep up with. He wrenched open doors and then left them hanging ajar, too driven to reach the next room to leave things as he'd found them. Lucy scrambled behind him, trying rooms on the other side of the hall. Lady Bridgerton was just up ahead, doing the same.
"Oh!"
Lucy jumped back, slamming a door shut.
"Did you find them?" Mr. Bridgerton demanded.
Both he and Lady Bridgerton immediately moved to her side.
"No,"
Lucy said, blushing madly. She swallowed.
"Someone else."
Lady Bridgerton groaned.
"Good God. Please say it wasn't an unmarried lady."
Lucy opened her mouth, but several seconds passed before she said,
"I don't know. The masks, you realize."
"They were wearing masks?" Lady Bridgerton asked.
"They're married, then.
And not to each other." Lucy desperately wanted to ask how she had reached that conclusion, but she couldn't quite bring herself to do so. And besides, Mr. Bridgerton quite diverted her thoughts by cutting in front of her and yanking the door open. A feminine shriek split the air, followed by an angry male voice, uttering words Lucy dare not repeat.
"Sorry," Mr. Bridgerton grunted. "Carry on."
He shut the door.
"Morley," he announced, "and Winstead's wife."
"Oh,"
Lady Bridgerton said, her lips parting with surprise.
"I had no idea."
"Should we do something?" Lucy asked.
"Good heavens, there were people committing adultery not 10 feet away from her."
"It's Winstead's problem," Mr. Bridgerton said grimly. "We have our own matters to attend to."
Lucy's feet remained rooted to the spot as he took off again, striding down the hallway. Lady Bridgerton glanced at the door, looking very much as if she wanted to open it and peek inside. But in the end she sighed and followed her brother-in-law. Lucy just stared at the door, trying to figure out just what it was that was niggling at her mind. The couple on the table, for God's sake, had been a shock, but something else was bothering her. Something about the scene wasn't quite right, out of place, out of context. Or maybe something was sparking a memory. What was it?
"Are you coming?"
Lady Bridgerton called.
Yes,
Lucy replied. And then she took advantage of her innocence and youth and added,
"The shock, you know. I just need a moment."
Lady Bridgerton gave her a sympathetic look and nodded, but she carried on her work, inspecting the rooms on the left side of the hall. What had she seen? There was the man and the woman, of course, and the aforementioned table. 2 chairs, pink, 1 sofa striped, and 1 end table with a vase of cut flowers. Flowers. That was it. She knew where they were. If she was wrong and everybody else was right, and her brother really was in love with Hermione, there was only one place he would have taken her to try to convince her to return the emotion. The orangery. It was on the other side of the house, far from the ballroom, and it was filled not just with orange trees, but with flowers, gorgeous tropical plants that must have cost Lord Bridgerton a fortune to import. Elegant orchids, rare roses, even humble wildflowers, brought in and replanted with care and devotion. There was no place more romantic in the moonlight, and no place her brother would feel more at ease. He loved flowers. He always had, and he possessed an astounding memory for their names, scientific and common. He was always picking something up, rattling off some sort of informational tidbit. This one only opened in the moonlight, and that one was related to some such plant brought in from Asia. Lucy had always found it somewhat tedious, but she could see how it might seem romantic if it weren't one's brother doing the talking. She looked up the hall. The Bridgertons had stopped to speak to each other, and Lucy could see by their postures that the conversation was intensely felt. Wouldn't it be best if she were the one to find them, without any of the Bridgertons? If Lucy found them, she could warn them and avert disaster. If Hermione wanted to marry her brother, well, it could be her choice, not something she had to do because she'd been caught unawares. Lucy knew how to get to the orangery. She could be there in minutes. She took a cautious step back toward the ballroom. Neither Gregory nor Lady Bridgerton seemed to notice her. She made her decision. 6 quiet steps, backing up carefully to the corner, and then 1 last quick glance thrown down the hall. She stepped out of sight. And ran. She picked up her skirts and ran like the wind, or at the very least, as fast as she possibly could in her heavy velvet ball gown. She had no idea how long she would have before the Bridgertons noticed her absence, and while they would not know her destination, she had no doubt that they would find her. All Lucy had to do was find Hermione and Richard first. If she could get to them, warn them, she could push Hermione out the door and claim she'd come across Richard alone. She would not have much time, but she could do it. She knew she could. Lucy made it to the main hall, slowing her pace as much as she dared as she passed through. There were servants about, and probably a few late-arriving guests as well, and she couldn't afford to arouse suspicion by running. She slipped out and into the west hallway, skidding around a corner as she took off again at a run. Her lungs began to burn, and her skin grew damp with perspiration beneath her gown, but she did not slow down. It wasn't far now. She could do it. She knew she could. She had to. And then, amazingly, she was there, at the heavy double doors that led out to the orangery. Her hand landed heavily on one of the doorknobs, and she meant to turn it, but instead she found herself bent over, struggling to catch her breath. Her eyes stung, and she tried to stand, but when she did, she was hit with what felt like a wall of panic. It was physical, palpable, and it rushed at her so quickly that she had to grab onto the wall for support. Dear God! She didn't want to open that door. She didn't want to see them. She didn't want to know what they'd been doing, didn't want to know how or why. She didn't want this, any of this. She wanted it all back as it was, just 3 days earlier. Couldn't she have that back? It was just 3 days. 3 days and Hermione would still be in love with Mr. Edmonds, which really wasn't such a problem since nothing would come of it, and Lucy would still be... She would still be herself. Happy and confident, and only practically engaged. Why did everything have to change? Lucy's life had been perfectly acceptable the way it was. Everyone had his place, and all was in perfect order, and she hadn't had to think so hard about everything. She hadn't cared about what love meant or how it felt, and her brother wasn't secretly pining for her best friend, and her wedding was a hazy plan for the future, and she'd been happy. She had been happy. And she wanted it all back. She grasped the knob more tightly, tried to turn it, but her hand wouldn't move. The panic was still there, freezing her muscles, pressing at her chest. She couldn't focus, she couldn't think, and her legs began to tremble. Oh, dear God, she was going to fall. Right there in the hallway, inches from her goal, she was going to crumple to the floor, and then, Lucy! It was Mr. Bridgerton, and he was running to her, and it occurred to her that she'd failed. She'd failed. She'd made it to the orangery. She'd made it in time. But then she'd just stood at the door. Like an idiot, she'd stood there with her fingers on the bloody knob and... My God, Lucy, what were you thinking? He grabbed her by the shoulders, and Lucy leaned into his strength. She wanted to fall into him and forget. I'm sorry, she whispered. I'm sorry. She did not know what she was sorry for, but she said it all the same. This is no place for a woman alone, he said, and his voice sounded different, hoarse. Men have been drinking. They use the masks as a license to... He fell silent. And then, people are not themselves. She nodded, and she finally looked up, pulling her eyes from the floor to his face. And then she saw him. Just saw him. His face, which had become so familiar to her. She seemed to know every feature, from the slight curl of his hair to the tiny scar near his left ear. She swallowed. Breathed. Not quite the way she was meant to, but she breathed. More slowly, closer to normal. I'm sorry, she said again, because she didn't know what else to say. My God! He swore, searching her face with urgent eyes. What happened to you? Are you all right? Did someone... His grip loosened slightly as he looked frantically around. Who did this? He demanded. Who made you... No, Lucy said, shaking her head. It was no one. It was just me. I wanted to find them. I thought of... Well, I didn't want you to, and then... And then I got here and I... Gregor's eyes moved quickly to the doors to the orangery. Are they in there?
I don't know, Lucy admitted. I think so. I couldn't...
The panic was finally receding, almost gone, really, and it all seemed so silly now. She felt so stupid. She'd stood there at the door and she'd done nothing. Nothing.
I couldn't open the door, she finally whispered, because she had to tell him. She couldn't explain it. She didn't even understand it. But she had to tell him what had happened. Because he'd found her. And that had made the difference.
Gregory, Lady Bridgerton burst on the scene, practically hurtling herself against them, quite clearly out of breath from having tried to keep up.
Lady Lucinda, why did you... Are you all right?
She sounded so concerned that Lucy wondered what she looked like. She felt pale. She felt small, actually, but what could possibly be in her face that would cause Lady Bridgerton to look upon her with such obvious worry?
I'm fine, Lucy said,
relieved that she had not seen her as Mr. Bridgerton had.
Just a bit overset. I think I ran too quickly. It was foolish of me. I'm sorry.
When we turned around and you were gone, Lady Bridgerton looked as if she were trying to be stern, but worry was creasing her brow, and her eyes were so very kind. Lucy wanted to cry. No one had ever looked at her like that. Hermione loved her, and Lucy took great comfort in that. But this was different. Lady Bridgerton couldn't have been that much older than she was. 10 years, maybe 15, but the way she was looking at her, it was almost as if she had a mother. It was just for a moment, just a few seconds, really, but she could pretend, and maybe wish just a little. Lady Bridgerton hurried closer and put an arm around Lucy's shoulders, drawing her away from Gregory, who allowed his arms to return to his sides.
"Are you certain you're all right?" she asked.
Lucy nodded.
"I am now."
Lady Bridgerton looked over to Gregory. He nodded, once. Lucy didn't know what that meant.
"I think they might be in the orangery," she said,
and she wasn't quite certain what had caught at her voice. Resignation or regret?
"Very well," Lady Bridgerton said, her shoulders pushing back as she went to the door. "There's nothing for it, is there?"
Lucy shook her head. Gregory did nothing. Lady Bridgerton took a deep breath and pulled open the door. Lucy and Gregory immediately moved forward to peer inside, but the orangery was dark, the only light, the moon, shining through the expansive windows.
"Damn!"
Lucy's chin drew back in surprise. She'd never heard a woman curse before. For a moment, the trio stood still. Then Lady Bridgerton stepped forward and called out,
"Lord Fensworth! Lord Fensworth, please reply! Are you here?"
Lucy started to call out for Hermione, but Gregory clamped a hand over her mouth.
"Don't," he whispered in her ear. "If someone else is here, we don't want them to realize we're looking for them both."
Lucy nodded, feeling painfully green. She'd thought she'd known something of the world, but as each day passed, it seemed she understood less and less. Mr. Bridgerton stepped away, moving farther into the room. He stood with his hands on his hips, his stance wide as he scanned the orangery for occupants.
"Lord Fensworth,"
Lady Bridgerton called out again. This time they heard a rustling, but soft and slow, as if someone were trying to conceal his presence. Lucy turned toward the sound, but no one came forward. She bit her lip. Maybe it was just an animal. There were several cats at Aubrey Hall. They slept in a little hutch near the door to the kitchen, but maybe one of them had lost its way and got locked in the orangery. It had to be a cat. If it were Richard, he'd have come forward when he heard his name. She looked at Lady Bridgerton, waiting to see what she would do next. The Viscountess was looking intently at her brother-in-law, mouthing something, and motioning with her hands, and pointing in the direction of the noise. Gregory gave her a nod, then moved forward on silent feet, his long legs crossing the room with impressive speed, until... Lucy gasped. Before she had time to think,
Gregory had charged forward, a strange primal sound ripping from his throat. Then he positively leaped through the air, coming down with a thud and a grunt of, "I have you."
"Oh, no!"
Lucy's hand rose to cover her mouth. Mr. Bridgerton had someone pinned to the floor, and his hands looked to be very close to his captive's throat. Lady Bridgerton